Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean,
days
I feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
Can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala, New York podcast.
Welcome to episode 89 of the podcast. I am Dave, your host. Thank you for listening, as always. Today on the podcast, psychotherapist and Shambhala Buddhist teacher Natalie Baker will be talking about self-doubt. Yes, the root of it all, self-doubt. Now, before we get to that, I do want to mention that the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York is presenting a special weekend program, the weekend of February 5th, with Shastri Nick Kranz. Nicholas Kranz is a teacher in Boston. We're flying him out, or maybe he's taking a train, or maybe he's going to drive. I don't know how he's going to get here, but he's going to come here all the way from Boston to New York to lead this weekend called Leadership on the Spot. It is a weekend exploring the practice of social meditation. What is social meditation? Well, you have to come. You have to find out. Participants will explore how we actively create culture in each moment and learn ways we can bring authentic communication and leadership into our workplaces, relationships, and communities. Well, that's good. That is the weekend of February 5th, 6th, and 7th. If you can't do the whole weekend, come check out the Friday Night Talk, February 5th. And come say hi to Nick Kranz. He's a great guy, and we're glad he's coming here. And now, for this talk by Natalie Baker. This was recorded a few weeks ago at our weekly Dharma gathering. Natalie Baker, self-doubt. How do you feel about it?
So this is a favorite topic of mine, because you won't progress along the path unless you relate with your self-doubt. Darn. Sometimes, you know, we come to meditation practice with this subtle or not so subtle hope that we could just bypass all the parts that we're uncomfortable with. Basically our minds. And then we could just rest in a nice, pleasant, blissful. It's kind of like those cat videos, right? Where you're just like, aw, so cute. But unfortunately, that is not what happens when you work with your mind in meditation practice. The Buddhist path starts out with some good news. And particularly how Trungpa Rinpoche, who started the Shambhala Centers, he wanted to communicate the Buddhist teachings, starting with looking at how workable we are. So he introduced the idea of basic goodness, or when he talked to people in my profession, he called it basic sanity. That fundamentally, we're workable. I think that that's what New Year's resolutions are. It's that little part of ourselves that recognizes that we are workable. And so we go, you know, this year, I'm going to do something different. And then we set an expectation that's way too high and unachievable. And then we get disappointed and we give up on ourselves. But the seed of that, I think, is that appreciation that there's something about us that makes us worth the effort. So the teaching of the Buddha, the one who achieved fundamental sanity, awakening, the recognition of the way things actually are, all the ways you can define enlightenment, point to it. He wanted to communicate in the way that all the teachers after him also wanted to communicate, that fundamentally there's something inherently good. In fact, better than good, perfect, sane, brilliant, wise. So, from my point of view, that's actually a very kind thing. To let people know there's no fundamental problem. But of course, that's not what we experience, right? We're not like, oh yeah, right, of course. Okay, I'm good. See y'all later. We all have some sort of narrative that often starts with the phrase, yeah, but. Yeah, but I'm different. So I always think it's a good idea to not only listen, but to have the opportunity to apply it to ourselves and then share that. So if you're game, what I would like you to do is I want you to think of, just for a second, just reflect on what comes to mind for you when you ask the question, what is my basic nature? What is the core of me? What am I made of? What is my nature? The Buddha says, the Buddhist teachers say, right, that I'm fundamentally sane. And just for a minute, just watch your mind. What do I think? What do I think that I'm made of? What am I at my core? Did you have some thoughts? I mean, we come by our confusion honestly, you know, to whatever degree we experience confusion, uncertainty, doubt, right? Because it's not like we were born with a manual, right? This is what it's all about. This is who you are. But it's interesting. I find a helpful person to look at when you're struggling with this idea of basic goodness or Buddha nature, basic sanity, fundamental okayness, however you want to describe that, it's helpful to think about a child, maybe even a child that you know. And would you look, so think of a child right now, maybe even one that you just saw on the street, doesn't necessarily have to be personal. And would you ever say about that child, that they're not workable. They're not worth it. And now pay attention to that knowingness. It's not really an idea. The certainty that you experience in that second of the child's workability, which really doesn't have words connected to it. There's just like, no. There's a knowingness. I think that's kind of a one way, anyway, that we can start to know that we actually have certainty about basic goodness. We may, when we turn the question on ourselves, we may go, I don't know about me. So when Trungpa Rinpoche talked about our self-doubt, what am I made of? Am I okay? Is this finally proof that there's something wrong with me? I'm not okay. Right? If we go through a period of depression, very easily we can think, well, maybe there is really something wrong with me. And that would be actually kind of an intelligent thought. But Trungpa Rinpoche called it the Buddhist version of original sin, because it's like the description you gave of the light, but now there's something obscuring the light. A very common analogy is the sun with clouds. Our fixation on our doubt prevents us from experiencing basic goodness. And it's interesting because it is first thought, second thought. It goes like that. So first, our first instinct is, yeah, it's okay. And then the second thought is the doubt. But how come I had that feeling this morning? So that's a very important process to understand, is that usually our first sense is our basic intelligence arising. And then right after that, in the split second after that, is our doubt. 1, 2. So if you're ever wondering which one to use as your reference point, right? Which one do we use all day as the reference point? Right, the second and the third and the fourth and the fifth. And it makes us very concerned and kind of focused on this person. Because we don't really feel like we can fully trust this person. We got to constantly watch them to make sure they don't say anything stupid or do something that isn't fall within the boundaries of what makes a good person, right? We just constantly got to monitor this person. So that also doesn't benefit us. Right? Because it just keeps the whole thing just kind of like this feedback loop. Those doubtful thoughts trigger that feeling, which trigger more of those thoughts. So what to do? Well, that's where the practice of meditation comes in. I was thinking that mindfulness, I think, is not quite the right way to say it. I think it's more mind on this. So we're practicing placing our minds, our attention, on the object of our breath, in this case. And when we don't, we're like, you ever see a kite when it's, you know, the string's been cut, right? And it's just like all over the place. That's us. That's us with our thinking, just following, right? Just an emotion arises, and then we follow that, and then something happens, and then we follow that. We don't, if you study yourself, right, you don't actually spend a lot of time during the day, usually. Maybe you guys are different than me, but I don't spend a lot of time during the day being very thoughtful about where I'm placing my attention. No, I'm not going to think about that problem. No, I'm not going to think about that thing I'm scared of. Oh, I'm just going to focus on that one thing. No, we're all over the place. And often the wind carrying our kites is some degree of uncertainty, some degree of self-doubt. So when we practice mindfulness, it's like giving that kite a string again, and somebody's hanging on to that string. So we set an intention, which is, I'm going to sit on the cushion, and I'm not going to just like let my mind just go wherever. I'm actually going to give it a task. And the task is to label thoughts thinking when they arise, when I notice them, when they take me away. And then I'm going to bring my attention back to the sensations of the breath. Right? Hopefully that's what we're doing, some version of that. And then, right, our attention gets stolen away. Sometimes it's 10 minutes. But then at some point we wake up, we label thoughts thinking, and we find the breath again. And we give ourselves that instruction to go out with the breath, to be with the breath, not to be the commentator, but to actually have bare attention on the experience of breathing, maybe the sensation of the air going out of our nostrils, which is a very hard thing to do. Really? I can do that? I can just let go of that world of thought and come back to the breath? And usually there is a question that follows in the Q&A, which is, if I let go of my thoughts and I just like hang out on the breath, won't I sort of become a mental vegetable? Right? Won't I sort of like, I've got things I want to do with my life. I'm worried I'm just going to like just collapse on the couch and not accomplish anything. So that arising of, is it really okay? Right, that's that doubt. There's a sort of fearful quality to it. We all have it. It's there with us. But we sit ourselves on the cushion and we practice anyway. And then what happens? If we're not going to have an agenda for our meditation practice, right, that we're not going to have an agenda to feel blissful or refreshed or good, right, which is all part of just thought. That's just thought. What's actually going to happen? Trungpa Rinpoche said, "I just sell the ticket. You take the ride." And we don't know what's going to happen when we let go of constantly being lost in thought, constantly churning out, sorting out all our thinking, all of our emotions. Never judge your meditation practice. Because if you do, at some point, you won't like what you see, and you'll decide to stop practicing. Those were the words of advice of an old Tibetan yogi who spent, it was 10 years in solitary retreat. Had this long white beard. That always stayed with me. I think because I tend to judge myself fairly harshly. But it's kind of a radical idea that we're exploring here. That there's some quality to us, a nature to us, in us, of us, around us, that's wise, clear-seeing, compassionate, knowing, and that nature is here right now. Nothing needs to be added to you or taken away from you. But we do have this issue of not knowing that experience or only having glimpses of it or having the idea of it, but not being 100% certain that we really know that experience. Is that it? But that's the path. Part of why there are, although they're not in here anymore, well, we have a couple of examples, well, tankas, so the paintings of teachers. The whole point of that is to remind us that there were ordinary people like you and me who set out on this journey, starting out completely uncertain and full of self-doubt, and achieved some understanding. Happiness that doesn't go away, right? So that's what they say about Buddha nature, is that it's a nature that's fundamentally happy. Maybe not how you and I think about happy, so You may have come tonight because, you know, you wanted to check out meditation practice. See what went on here. But my guess is there's also a part of you that would like to be known fully. That we don't 100% believe our self-doubt. And if we did, we wouldn't do this. Because it's kind of a waste of time from a New Yorker's point of view. Right? Sit on a cushion, do nothing. It's not very productive. So this path, this journey, is very personal, and it's really about you working with your own mind, right? And then there's people like me or teachers who come through, and, you know, we say a few things to encourage you. Keep going. Don't give up. Practice. 10 minutes a day. You can do it. But really, it's a journey. This journey is a journey that's very personal, and only you know what your experience is. And you know if you're actually doing the meditation instruction. So try. When you do sit and practice, try to really, in a gentle but clear way, say, okay, I'm going to sit for 10 minutes, and I'm going to try to be precise. That when I notice that I'm thinking, I'm going to just very much, I'm going to clearly label it. Like with those little label makers, right? Thinking. And then I'm going to try my best to trust that it's okay to just breathe. I don't have to solve that problem at work. I don't have to work through that emotion right now. I don't have to do anything other than be with my breath. Right? That's the risk. The risk is that I'll be with my breath and that'll be it. Because sometimes what happens is that people say, well, meditation practice doesn't work. And then I say, okay, well, tell me what you do when you sit down on your meditation cushion. And then what they're doing on the cushion is kind of spacing out. And I'm like, yeah, well, spacing out doesn't work. So if you are going to make the effort to sit, to really, you know, be clear with yourself about the instruction. But then I'm also going to invite you to go further with this topic, if you're inspired to look more at your minds. So when we practice meditation, one of the things that actually we do get out of it, it's a side effect, is that we cultivate the ability to place our minds, our mindfulness, on an object. And so then it's easier to actually look at thought, because we're not just being the thought. We actually have the ability now to have that part that's separate and can look at the thoughts, right? So this is more of a contemplation practice. So that's when we're mindful of thought or mindful of a particular conceptual topic. So what I encourage you to do, if you're interested, is when you leave your home for your commute, that you set the intention that you're going to notice the quality of your thoughts. And specifically, to be very curious about doubt. How does my own doubt arise? And between leaving your home and getting to your destination, ever so often to check in and just notice, oh, what was I just thinking about? What was the tone? What was the emotional tone of my self-talk? And then the last part is, if you're interested in taking it a step further, I'm going to invite you at the end of the evening to meet over in this corner and pair up with someone that you're going to text at the end of the day or at the end of your commute to just say, like, this is what I noticed. And you don't have to have a conversation about it or, you know, take care of the other person in some way or do something in response, but really just as a way to have a fellow journeyer, somebody that you can check in with. It also helps us be a little bit more precise if there's somebody that we're accountable to. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm going to text them afterwards, so I got to do this. And it's really meant in the spirit of just really getting to know your mind. What is it like? As opposed to our normal way that we relate with our minds, which is that we just believe it, right? We just believe it, believe it, believe it, and we just act it out, act it out, act it out. And now we're cultivating more the part of being able to observe, right? What's arising? What's the tone of what's arising? And also, too, because it's nice to get to know people. We always feel like, you know, we're the only ones who are, you know, struggling. That's very common. Nobody struggles the way I struggle. Everybody else has it figured out, right? And then we can find examples, right? I know they have it figured out, and that person has it figured out. So it's also nice to know that, you know, we're all trying to figure it out. That's the Sangha principle. So we could have some discussion now if people have thoughts they want to share or questions they want to ask.
For me, there is a lot of fear of giving up the mean part of myself. It's very safe in a way. Because if I believed in my basic goodness, then I'm vulnerable to somebody taking it away from me. You know, if I start from a place of loss, at least nobody else can do me further damage.
Mm-hmm.
It's very frightening.
Yeah, well, that's, very clearly put. Absolutely. And that's why Trungpa Rinpoche talked about fear and fearlessness, is because when we give up the doubt, then we are vulnerable. Yeah, that's what happens. So then we have to tolerate the fear. And not necessarily believe it, right? That's the hard part, is that, you know, we all assume that what's arising as our felt experience is true and real and meaningful. It's an accurate read, right? We all make that mistake constantly. Yeah.
Well, I'm very psychologically minded, so I attribute a lot of my fear to my childhood experiences, mm-hmm. and I just haven't been able to realize I'm not a child. I'm bigger and stronger, and I can move away from danger.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't integrated that. That would help me to feel less fearful, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, it's true, I'll be more vulnerable in a certain way, but I imagine that vulnerability, I think, to be more dangerous than it is, at least at this mm-hmm. point in my life.
Right, yeah. Well, I think it's helpful, too, just very practically, to recognize that, you know, we're animals, and that fear has a biological purpose, and the purpose it serves is to alert us to danger, right? But then we also have to appreciate something else about us as animals, which is that we're very prone to habitual patterning, right? So then that fear becomes a habit. And that habit gets played out and reinforced over and over again. So just very practically, to be able, when you notice that you're fearful, to look around. Okay, where's the danger? Right? Where is it? Okay, if I don't see danger, it means my body is feeling something that's not accurate. So then I have to tolerate. This is my experience. And that's, you know, meditation practice. When we stop, you know, when we sit down and meditate, in some ways what we're doing is we're taking the lid off, right? We all have, to some degree, like to keep certain things, you know, under the lid. And when we practice meditation, right, we're letting go a little bit of that. And so we are going to feel things. And it's very important to acknowledge that those feelings are fine. Fear, sadness, pain, all those things are just fine. They're sensations. There was probably a situation, an experience that created them, right? We're not crazy. But that we can work with them. Thank you. Yes.
Could you comment on the juxtaposition of being basically good or intrinsically good,
mm-hmm.
but also being workable or being on a path to somewhere. I think, you know, when we talk about way, when we meditate, our thoughts are going somewhere and we want to control them.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow we're saying we're good, but not quite there. We're going to get better. And for some of us, that's very appealing. Like, I'm going to get better by either sitting or by whatever.
Right.
Which
yes.
then means I'm not good yet.
Right.
So
that's great.
Could you comment on that,
well,
if possible?
Well, I think you did a good job. Yeah, I mean, that's what we do. We're very sneaky, right? We'll take the idea of our goodness, and very quickly it will become a conditional thing. And that's what we do, right? We do want to feel better. We want to be better people in relative terms, right? More patient, less angry, kinder, you know. We do want to be better. But this is, when you study this quality of doubt, it's very much about, what do we really think is at the core of our being? Because if we can practice looking at that, looking at what we really believe, what we really hold to be our truth, that's very helpful. Because if we come to the conclusion that we have confidence in our basic goodness, then we'll relax. But if we're not there yet, we're going to be nervous. And we're going to, am I there yet? How am I doing? Right? That's what we're going to do. And so then we shouldn't be surprised, right? That we're still going, well, I think I'm supposed to be fundamentally good, but I realize I just decided I can feel good about myself because my boss just told me I did a great job. Like, what? Really? Right? So that's the path quality, is that we definitely do not have that confidence yet. And a traditional analogy that's used by Buddhist teachers is of a sparrow building its nest. Sparrow or swallow? Anyway, where they create this nest and they fly, the mother bird flies in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out until she is 100% confident that that is a stable, sturdy nest. And that's what we have to do. We have to really question ourselves and go, well, what do I really believe? If I was 100% honest with myself, is it stable? Am I confident? Because that confidence, right, then we let go. Right, and then we get tense again. And that's the path. We just go wobble until we're certain. But to keep asking, you know, the direction is to keep asking, to keep examining until you reach certainty that you understand your nature. And to not stop until you get certain. Which is kind of a nice, it's really giving us permission to never give up on ourselves. That you can reach a point at which you're certain. Hopefully that's good news. But it's also a lot of work.
Sorry, I've gotten older. And I had a quadruple bypass. Mm. And I thought of that phrase, you know, where when you're older, when you're younger, you believe you're going to die. But when you're older, you can see the grave. I don't mean to be cheerful, but but there's this thing about belief and realization. I mean, mm-hmm. Isn't that at play? We kind of believe in basic goodness, but then we kind of look, and it seems to be evasive, and doesn't seem to be there. And so, just could you talk about just belief and realization and the interplay of that?
Belief and realization.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. So, most of us have the experience of thought. Most of us experience through the commentator, like you're watching a tennis game, right? And then there's McEnroe's voice as the ball is going back and forth. Right? On this path, we are allowing ourselves the opportunity to be the game, to be the experience that's happening. And as we study, and this does require study, like really like reading things and going, really, do I believe that? We gain understanding as to why that's important. And some people, like, get it automatically when you say to them, it's really about the experience, not the commentary about the experience or the judgment. Oh, that was a good serve. From a Buddhist point of view, that commentary is completely irrelevant. In fact, it's kind of in the way. But what we know is we know the commentary. That's what we're doing all day. So the practice of meditation, when we let go of the thought, right, when we label it thinking, we let go of it, we bring our attention back to the experience of the breath, now we're playing the game. We're just playing the game. And that's how we transition from belief to realization. That's it. Be the tennis game. But we have to get to the point where it really makes sense to us why it's important to stop being the commentator and to live the game. And in the beginning, it's not 100% clear why we're doing that.
So I just wonder, then, isn't the commentary also an experience in a way, the experience of the busyness of the mind? Because it can be so overwhelming sometimes, and the confusion, the fear, that then doesn't that become the experience, and would we then say to ourselves to run with it?
Say that last bit again.
So when it becomes so overwhelming, does the commentary become the experience and the felt sensation as well, and then do we just tell ourselves to run with it?
To run with it?
Yeah, and to just be aware, but also experience that commentary.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So he's making the important point that sometimes the commentary is the experience, and that we're noticing it like we notice the sensation of the racket moving in our hands, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but I also wonder whether it's equivalent in some ways.
It's equivalent. Well, it's certainly something that we experience, right? So in Buddhism, we talk about the five sense perceptions, but we also talk about a sixth one, which is thought, right? So we could say thought, emotion, right? We just put them together. So it's definitely something that we experience. But typically how we experience it, right, is that we're just that kite without a string, right? And when there's an emotion up, we're good. And then when the emotion goes down, we suck, we're a loser, right? And there's no precision at all, right? There's just kind of this blind belief. But yes, sometimes the emotion and the thought becomes the object of our practice, our awareness. And hopefully if you do this exercise this week of commuting and just noticing the quality of your thoughts, then we're starting to have a little bit less of believing it, and a little bit more awareness. Who's ready for a cup of tea? So if you would like to partner up with somebody and to do this exercise, I encourage you to come meet in the corner. And it's very simple. You would just send them a little email or a little text and just say, like, this is what I noticed. Try not to judge it, but just as a way to practice with company. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Natalie Baker. Visit us at ny.shambhala.org for more information about classes and weekend retreats. You can visit us at our weekly Dharma gathering in person to hear these talks. Meet great teachers like Natalie Baker in person at our weekly Dharma gathering every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. Keep listening. Tell your friends. And don't doubt yourself so much. This is me talking to myself. You're a good person, and you deserve to feel better about yourself. Thank you. Thank you, David. It's very nice of you to say about yourself. Okay. Later.